What I needed to show was that this entity, that person who was taking care of mom, trying to take care of family, trying to get into the school, learning all those skills and on the hustle, yeah. right? That person is still alive in the 30, 35-year-old, 40-year-old man
right.
right now. And that word luxury, when you get to a point where you can live in a luxury high rise, right. but you can't take the luxury of like making sure that your anxiety level is down.
Sure.
Like, what is luxury? Like to me, it is luxurious to now find peace.
We had to fight to get a meal, yeah. Wrongfully accused, we had to fight to get the pills. That's why we write to get a deal. He on the team, he gotta eat, you know. Despite your skills,
facts.
Keep it riding for the fam. You gotta light the wheel straight up. Look in the past bag, work up in the trash bag. I'll pass a lie to take the test before I pass class.
Yeah,
and my family needed bread. I had to come correct. That's why I keep airing it out like I just passed gas.
Super excited to have you guys on the show today. Terrell, I really want to jump right in. Coming off the success of Moonlight, winning an Oscar, you then jump right into David Makes Man, which is interesting to me because something I learned from you, black men don't watch TV, right? And the things that you're touching on, things that we touch on this show organically, sexuality, mental health, race, we touch on so much. It shows up every single minute in David Makes Man.
Yeah.
That was bold.
Yes and no. I mean, again, when we were talking before, we just had this conversation, but people always tell me one thing, and then there's this little thing in the back of my head. You ever watch Harry Potter?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'm House Slytherin.
Yes,
I'm House Slytherin.
So people don't get you.
It's just, and it's not on purpose. I don't mean to be, but I am. So when people tell me no to certain things, I'm like, why? And so very early on when we were, you know, before Moonlight was a thing, we had actually this man, Glenn, and Andre Holland, who is another friend of ours who is in our circle of care, brought me out to LA and they were like, yo, you should be thinking about TV. You should be having a conversation about television and what you want to do. And we spent 10 days just in a hotel scribbling ideas. And I was like, and every time I met with an executive, the thing they would say is like, well, black men don't watch TV.
Right.
Mm.
We don't count on them as the people who tune in. And we get it now. We still get it, even today. Even after making a show that specifically talks about what black men may be enduring. And one of the reasons why I loved coming across your show, John actually brought it to my attention first, I Am Athlete, was because I was like, they're doing exactly what we have kind of organically done.
Right.
You know, we all met each other in 2007 at Sundance. We met John on a Bunker Hill somewhere. and we became friends because we were like, yo, there are not a lot of us in this industry, and they certainly don't speak our same language. I remember Deion Sanders saying that to you all about like,
yeah.
what's the difference about going to an HBCU or an HBU or going to a privileged white institution? Well, one of the things is community, being able to speak each other's language. I know where you come from. Exactly. So that was one of the reasons right. for David Makes Man. I wanted to talk about like how there is a 15-year-old kid in me from this area, from Miami-Dade, who learned how to survive in so many ways, but hasn't learned how to live.
Yeah.
Right? Hasn't learned how to chill out. Hasn't learned how to walking around thinking I gotta navigate the bullies everywhere. Going into meetings, sweating, getting upset, getting anxious. And not knowing that that kid is still trying to survive on all cylinders. So that's where the show came from. And I think to me, it wasn't a thing of trying to be revolutionary. It was actually just trying to be necessary.
Yeah, I mean, for David Makes Man to be critically acclaimed, and I'm embarrassed to say this, I didn't, until OWN came to us and said, hey, we would love to partner with you guys to launch season 2, I had no clue, you know?
Yeah.
And when I start diving into it, one, critically acclaimed. Two, I'm like, this is me. This is us. And there's so many different scenes. There's so many different episodes where I'm like, that's me. That's me. Or that's my brother. That's my cousin. This is my world. And I feel like it's therapeutic. I feel like it's more of a legacy play than it is like to go chase another award.
Right.
That's how I feel about it. And it's so needed.
Yeah.
When you see a reflection of yourself that validates your existence, there's nothing more powerful than than media can do. Because we've gone so long, as you said, because the narrative is that black men don't watch TV, so why do we need to show them on TV? And that's probably the reason why they don't watch TV. They watch sports, you turn into Stephen A or whatever, because you know you'll see some sort of reflection of yourself in that particular milieu. But if it's not happening in the scripted world, then it's like, well, if they're not serving us, why should I be dining at that restaurant? You know what I'm saying?
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Yeah, so I can totally agree with what you're saying, man. Like, when you see a young man who is dealing with trauma of losing someone from his life very close, right? Trying to go to this school, negotiate things, help his mom, help his little brother who's still having troubles wetting the bed or whatnot.
Right.
His primary focus is not necessarily just doing his work. He's got all this other ish. I don't know, what's the, is there language on the show? All this other shit that he's got to deal with,
not
right?
All the way.
And the thing that like strikes me as interesting, because I was thinking about this in anticipation of our conversation, is he has this thing that he does, that Randall does, which was kind of like, which came first? I don't know. But like I was watching his knee and I was like, that's my knee. And I was like, you need to calm down. You're making me anxious. So, but I say that to say, we as a community and as men oftentimes don't think that we have the time or the luxury of tending to the thing that's not quite right internally because we have to keep moving forward. And I think in terms of what I would love to add to this conversation is that once we start to see that it's not a luxury, but a necessity to actually move forward.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, but even in that word luxury, I mean, that's the thing. And I was talking, I think I talked to you about this a little bit, which is why season two is so important. You know, a lot of folks were like, well, you know, we love Keeley. You know, we love seeing a Keeley on the screen. Why are you jumping? And I was like, no, we're going to still see Keeley. Everybody calm down. All the aunties who want to see Keeley, they're going to see they're going to see Keeley. What I needed to show was that this entity, that person who is taking care of mom, trying to take care of family, trying to get into the school, learning all those skills and on the hustle, right? That person is still alive in the 30, 35-year-old, 40-year-old man
right
now. And that's the word luxury. When you get to a point where you can live in a luxury high rise, right, but you can't take the luxury of like making sure that your anxiety level is down.
Sure.
Like, what is luxury? Like to me, it is luxurious to now find peace. Right. Like, keep peace,
absolutely,
right?
Can we do this? And I'm off script a little bit here because there's some clips we want to show. And it's something that I feel like a lot of us deal with. I feel like it's something that I still deal with, transitioning from football, playing football my entire life since I was six. So 27, 28 years playing ball. Now transitioning to being a retired athlete, there was a moment that you guys captured where little David, Akili, where you were the lookout. And you were pressured into that situation. And it's like, I feel like we all have that moment growing up in the inner city or in the hood where it's like walking home from school. There's a moment where you have to decide. It's like, am I going to go left or am I going to go right? Am I going to do these drugs or not? Am I going to join a gang or not? So you were pressured, but really because of your baby brother, like you took it for your baby brother. And so now you're in the moment, you're the lookout and you're going through a dream. And it's like, you're like, no, I am this, I am that. And then you're telling yourself lies almost into like what we always embrace and we glorify in our community. Like, no, I'm from the hood. No, I'm tough, I'm strong. Like,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden you start saying, I am water, I am.
Trying to put on that persona of being tough and being from the hood all the time when really we come from water, come from dirt and things like that. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, why you wrote this. And what that means, because I don't know if I took it the wrong way, but it just felt like that's something that we all deal with. Let's take a look at this.
Where do you come from?
Where I'm from?
I'm from the Ville.
I come from the hood. The gutter.
What is your story?
I come from people who know hard work.
Oh, that's funny to you. I know y'all see me as a clown, but my grandfather?
My grandfather.
My granddaddy had to run out of Alabama for smashing a white dude in the head with a bottle. For spitting on him. You see, he ain't played at it. Neither do I. Stupid. I come from Growers. Come from dirt. I come from water. I come from laughter. I come from runners.
What does all that mean? Like, I just want to make sure that what I saw and what I felt, you
talk
know.
About it.
I got it. Like,
yeah, talk about
talk
it.
Talk about it. Because I know what he was going to say that because however you received it was how you were supposed to receive it.
Well, I just feel like.
In that moment, I feel like David, you know what I'm saying, was trying to, at the beginning when he was telling the story about his grandfather, you know, slamming a bottle over somebody's head, right. You know, and him coming from the hood, just basically trying to encourage himself or talk himself up to do the task that he was set to do, you know what I'm saying, which was to be the lookout, watch whatever, you know what I'm saying, and look over stuff. So I guess when he was going and went into that dream, and he went too deep, and he got to talking about where he really came from and coming from dirt and water and all that other good stuff, and that's when you seen the police came and interrupted all that. So that's what I took from it, really.
Right. Season one was phenomenal. Season two, obviously, you guys, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to get a sneak peek before everyone else. But that was one of those emotional scenes for me because, you know, I feel like a lot of us, where we come from, we really embrace, like, we glorify, you know, I'm from the hood, I'm from the projects, I'm from the PJs. The tougher you are, the bigger your platform, right? The more power you have. And the reality is, in that scene, what I saw was, you know, someone struggling with embracing where they came from and then letting that go to embrace, like, no, what is real and what is beautiful, right? Because at the end of the day, we don't say that to each other.
Yeah.
We don't say like, nah, bro, like, I love you. We don't say, you know, this is beautiful. You know, I come from something that's bigger than just this small little, you know, neighborhood. So that's what I took from it.
Bigger than just me, I feel you, yeah.
Right. We struggle with, you know, seeing a beauty in life. Mm. Like, we get so wrapped up in surviving. We get so wrapped up in, you know, the aggression. You follow me?
I do. I mean, Glenn and I talk about this all the time. Glenn grew up in Chatham. I grew up in Liberty City, right there. If you look over, or if you look at 95 and Overtown, that used to be there. And I think a lot of what happened on the way home from school, from our magnet programs, from our gifted programs that were outside of that community, that were telling us, hey, you got to learn all these amazing things, but you can't learn them in your community.
Right.
Right. When we would come back in, we would have a choice. And we had, and again, I got offered more chances to, you know, be lookout than I did to be an Academy Award winner
that
age.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
Absolutely. And so when that choice keeps confronting you, when that's the choice that you keep getting, you keep thinking to yourself, well, how do I stand in it? How do I stand up to it? And David, like Akili said, is sitting on a corner doing lookout for the police when he should be doing his homework. And then he starts doing his homework, right? And I always thought to myself, I do remember that the few times that I was lookout and was thinking about my homework at the same time, I was like, oh, why do we always show, you know, look, there are great shows out there that do show black men. So let's not pretend that there aren't. This Is Us, The Wire, Snowfall. And I thought to myself, hey, I'm not in any way trying to be to denigrate that. I want, those are good stories. We need them. I want to be side by side on those. I want to tell the other portion of it, right? So we have many versions of it. So for example, yes, we know people are asked to be in the drug game, but then what does it mean for that person who's also trying to figure out how to do their homework at the same time? And so that's what you get. You get this moment where this kid is sitting in the drug game, but also trying to excel in his gifted program. And I know that's you. I know that's you. I know that's you. I know all of us have been in that position where we're like, I got to put on one face for these fellas, but I got to think about 70 other things. That we know medically that takes a toll on your body and your mind, because you're doing so much that your heart is racing, right? Your adrenals are going. Right. And if you keep doing that all the time, you end up with heart problems. Right. You end up having early stroke. You end up like, we know that this causes us to lose the kind of life that we want to lead later.
Yep.
Trying to get through these sort of crucibles. Right. Yeah. Trying to thread these needles of these very impossible moments.
Yeah.
And so that's what that was. It's an impossible moment. It's a moment that is both dangerous and both beautiful at the same time.
And also what I see from that is, I see everything that you saw and what you were saying, Akili. Also see a young black boy having an existential crisis in middle school, right? Mm. And I think that we don't talk nearly enough about that. One of the things I really appreciate about a lot of things that you've said publicly about mental health in general is that we sort of ignore that, and then we get to adulthood, as you see in season two, David Makes Men, and you presume that you've gotten past it.
Right.
So that part of your life is over. Right. I've had so many relationships in my life with people that are quick to set aside past trauma and just presume I've gotten past it, so I've gotten over it,
right?
And that is the sort of harmful nature of what we seemingly do to ourselves is that, you know, I remember talking to someone who was, you know, much older than me and asked him about a particular moment in their life. And they were like, oh, I don't talk about that no more. I don't need to talk about that. That's over. I've gotten past that. Why do you want to bring that up? People in my family, right? And I'm like, well, that, you know, that still affects you right this second, like up to real time right now, you know?
That's, and you cover that in season two. You know, now you got little David, right? Season one, and you, obviously you show up in season two as well. But then you see the adult.
When he came back to set, he wasn't little, so we call him Young David.
Young David.
He came in brolic. He was like, hey, how y'all, mustache. He was like.
I saw him when he was getting out of the chair makeup, and he pulled off his shirt, and it was like, golly. All right, Young David.
Well, you got any tips? Let me see what I got through.
He waiting for I Am Athlete in LA to open up.
Yeah, right. Wait, let's go. Let's rock. But you see that, right, in season two where the struggle, and I think that's why that clip, and I wanted to lead with that, was so powerful for me because, you know, to make it in football, I embraced, you know, all of the struggle and the pain to make, like I even wrote something when I was at McLean Hospital. So really quick, spent 3 months at McLean Hospital, 2011, diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. And I walked away from the game, and I was willing to stay there as long as it took to just get back my life. And I would write when I would get to the root of something, all right? And one of the things I wrote, I was like, damn, like, I'm so good over here, but I'm thriving over here, but I'm struggling here, right? And my interpersonal relationships, off the field, you know, who I want to be. And so I wrote this thing one time, and it, you know, please don't judge me. It probably won't win an award. But it's like, you know, my pain, my sadness gives me my strengths. My strengths ruin my mind, body, and soul. I've been trapped all my life, not by man or cage or by cages, but by my own emotions. Where I've been while traveling inside myself can be summed up by one word. Damn. And I was like, in that moment, I realized that, like, why I made it in football was because of that aggression and coming from the hood, like, gotta survive. And when I was there at McLean Hospital, I was in dialectical behavior therapy, self-assessment, mentalization therapy, went through a clinical evaluation, neurological evaluation. So I learned so much. And in that time, like, you pick up skills and tools to be able to move forward, to be able to deal with the trauma, not just say, oh, let me put it over here and compartmentalize. Like, I gotta face this. So one of the skills and tools is words of affirmation. It's just self-talk. So that when you, that moment, seeing you go through that in the film, it was powerful for me because I saw myself, because that's what I do every day. It's like, no, I'm a phenomenal husband. You know, no, I'm a phenomenal dad. No, I'm not that. No, I come from water. I come from the dirt. Like, when I say dirt, that to me, that is mindfulness. Being able to walk out and be like, man, this is beautiful. So that's why that was powerful for me. I couldn't articulate it, you know, earlier on in the show, but that was powerful. John, you saw I Am Athlete, right? You introduced T to I Am Athlete. Where did you see the synergy?
Well, first of all, I love how y'all start the show because I was listening to the episodes. Y'all had Prime on there and Ocho, and you get a sense of community immediately. There's a common language, and some of that was football, but it was also just the interplay. I mean, these guys are lining up head to head. And that pulls you in. But what's beautiful about what you've created about the show is you've given people a space where they can come in and be vulnerable. Yeah. So you're talking about, you know, what you went through. Prime felt comfortable enough to share what he's been through. And I think what happens is we don't get access to that early enough. If there was a way to talk about mental health before there was a problem, we might be able to build those tools so that we're able to, you know, deal with them as they come up. So I'm just really interested in how we can make that happen. The clip, I don't know why it just destroyed me when you guys played it, man. I think all hoods ain't built the same. There's a different structure to all of them. And once it gets to, you know, what Dave is talking about coming from water and dirt, and we've got images of him, I don't think it's a mistake that they put his mother in the shot too. It's getting to this deeper human thing that transcends all of that. And losing what that is for you, I think, is the start of all of that. So just having a good sense of what that is, who you are, where you come from, is something I really appreciate in Terrell's work. I don't really get it anywhere else. The first show I saw that cracked that open for me was one of Terrell's plays.
That song you were talking about, seeing yourself reflected.
Brandon saw that play.
Marcus, or The Secrets of Sweet?
No, Brandon saw, came to Coral Gables like 10 years ago and saw Brother Size.
Oh, you saw Brother Size.
this like right. production that I had just
not
did.
Not too long ago, yeah. Right.
It was wild. I was like, man, I was like, we took pictures and everything. And I was like, okay. Cool.
Doing those plays are like coming home, man. It's really strange. And it's not like I grew up in Miami, but it's still like coming home.
I think it's important. And I think that's why, you know, This Is Us is important. David Makes Man is important. There's so many other that even that you spoke on earlier. It's important. I Am Athlete is important, which is that conversation and that platform organically created itself. You know, and what we're doing, I think like I Am Athlete, is the traffic generator. It's like what you're doing with David Makes Man, bro, it's therapeutic.
It really is.
I've had experience. I had one of my ex-teammates, Elvis Dumerville. He owns property all over South Florida. It's tough. We talk all the times about being young entrepreneurs. We check in with each other and we push each other. We encourage each other. We've been doing that since 2006, both drafted to the Denver Broncos in the fourth round. We're like this. And now we're in this new phase of our life, you know, husbands, fathers, you know, entrepreneurs. And so we have new challenges. He called me one day and he's like, bro, I walked in my office and I almost lost it. I hired this dude, just got out of prison from Miami, trying to give him an opportunity, right? I got this platform, trying to put him on. He got dreads, gold teeth. I walk in. And I'm hot. I'm like, bro, what are you doing? Why are you on your phone when you're supposed to be working? And he looks down and he's watching I Am Athlete. And he's watching us talk about mental health and the check-ins. And he called me and said, I wanted to encourage you to keep going. And that's why we kept going. Because at that time, we were only getting like 80 people watching our shows live. Now we're getting 20, 30, 40,000 and millions of views, right? And so I say that because This Is Us and, you know, David Makes Man is 10 times bigger than that, right? So I just want to encourage you guys to keep going. And I know black men don't watch TV. Yeah, I love that. They watch YouTube.
They do watch YouTube.
Think about that. Like when you go and we're traveling in Miami, you got guys with dreads, gold teeth. They're tapping into these conversations and they're like, yo, thank you so much. So we got to continue to create these spaces to have these conversations around sexuality, having D Wade on our show, right? Like, we don't talk about that in a locker room. We know a guy, this dude may be, you know, gay or whatever. And, you know, the way we treat that person or may not even treat that person, may not even have a conversation. So he's living in isolation. Like, we got to create these spaces.
Well, that's one of the things. I mean, again, the reason why we gravitated, or I was, once John put me on and I was watching this, I was like, first of all, you know, this means it's kismet because it's been happening. Like, this is what we've been doing since, yeah. Like you said, in 2006, since 2007, this is what we check in. We, you know, if I didn't have these fellas, it was a rough
especially
year.
Especially during the pandemic.
Fam, it was rough. If we didn't, I mean, we would just get on Zooms and just sit there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Literally just sit there for some time. And then maybe somebody will crack a joke or something. But, you know, we would just look at each other and be there and see each other's kids climbing on things in the background. I mean, I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to look into these black men's houses and see, like, yo, life is going on. They have families to protect. But also worried, instantly worried about, because now they got all these sons. We ain't got no girls.
I got two boys. He's got a boy. I tried. Listen, I just go straight Y chromosomes.
It ain't over.
We wait.
Look who's talking.
Exactly. But come on, John. What's going on?
Hey, man, don't rush me, man. I'm gonna find my own way there.
Oh, okay.
I do want to say I love what you all are doing. I Am Athlete, and it's not dissimilar from what we've created, sort of. Naturally, as Terrell just sort of spoke to, you know, we all met around that same time in 2007. And then immediately there was a sort of kinship. We're all from different places, right? Sterling's from St. Louis. I'm from Chicago. John's from outside of Chicago, Terrell is from Miami. And our group, you know, which also includes Andre Holland and Brian Tyree Henry, who's also on another show that talks about black men, Atlanta. And we immediately sort of came together and was like, oh, this feels right. Right? There was never a formal conversation around it. It was just like, oh, I feel safe here. And we came together around Terrell's work. Terrell was writing for us. And many times we hadn't seen ourselves on stage, or there were only like three black plays that people would thrust in front of us and say, hey, do that. And we can't just keep doing the same three plays, right? Yeah. We can't be in the same parts. And Terrell was writing for us and seeing us. And I think we sort of informally were like, okay, let's make this a thing, right? Because I go off and I do my TV show, or I go off and do my other play or my other movie, but then I come back together with you guys and it feels right. It feels safe. And then we meet somebody like Akili and it's like, oh, we're made of the same stuff. You know what I mean? And I think that we don't necessarily talk about all that often. And then we sort of formalized it and created a company together, which we're really proud of. Like,
what's
like
the name like of the company?
It's called Cast Iron Entertainment. And, you know,
but what's the goal?
The goal is just that, to see one another, right?
Why is that important? Like, because we're in this movement right now, you know, where I feel like we're finding our voice as the collective. You know, we're talking about the black dollar. We're talking about the black community, supporting each other. Why is that important?
Can I ask a question, Brent? First of all, I think the reason why this format works for you is because anytime I would listen to you speak, while you were still in the league and after, there's never any artifice. I don't think you're capable of artifice, right? Like, you only come straight from the heart. Where, like, other like, I don't know what it was like for your publicist or whatever. It was like, Brandon, stop saying that.
Right?
Right? Because you would just say what was on your heart and what was on your mind in that moment. But you were just talking about being in the league, and you were equating it to that clip about him being lookout or whatnot. And he started off in a very sort of hard way. I'm from the hood, you know what I'm saying? My granddaddy did this or whatnot. And when he started to go to what I would call a softer place, it actually distracted him from what he needed to be doing, right? So like, maybe there's something about a time and a place for allowing stuff, but there's a necessary armor that you need in order to make it from A to B, right? So my question to you is, in the league, like, I've seen lots of athletes after they're done with their tenure have a Kobe. They're like, you know, the dad's girl, you know, father of girls and whatnot. And even talking to D Wade after he stopped being, you know, in the league, he said, like, I could turn off a certain part of myself and be present in a way that I don't think I was beforehand. Can you be in the league and be open?
Yeah.
Or do you necessarily have to be armored?
Woo, that's a good question.
Thanks, man.
Oh, my goodness. I think that to be open is the way. And I think there's a lot of work we have to do to learn how to do that as athletes. Yeah. For me, what I see is the guys who are open are the guys who are more balanced and healthier. The guys who are thriving at a lot, like, you know, balling and doing a great job, are the ones who live in this space of what we saw young David.
Right.
Right.
They're like, not necessarily balanced, but they are excelling.
Right. And it goes back to what I wrote when I was at McLean Hospital, right? That piece. And that's what I was dealing with. So I think it was hard for me. You know, it was when before McLean Hospital, that's it. I got tapped into that. And it was like, this is not business. It's personal. And if you cross that line, you're taking food off my table. And I didn't understand the big picture. And after I left McLean Hospital, the struggle for me was, you know, how do I pull from where I come from, the thing that helped me get here, but still be the man or continue to be the man that I just worked so hard to be?
Right.
You know?
Do you continue to write? Are you still writing?
Not consistently. One of my buddies, Jordan Shallow, just sent me a notebook and a pen.
Hey.
And he said, it's time to write. Right. But that's why that piece was so powerful for me, because, you know, that's where I'm at today. So that, it's like they say business is sport. So I transitioned from sport. Now I'm in business. So I'm trying to find that balance of being the guy that I found myself to be back at McLean Hospital and what we created there. But like, my DNA is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the poorest county in all of Pennsylvania. You know, poverty, violence. We live in survival mode.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, there was one part in season two where I think the adult David, you know, he was talking to his therapist and it was, she said, you need to learn how to de-escalate. You know, impulsivity.
Right, but that's the thing though. What I find interesting, first of all, you should know that when I set out to create this stuff, those questions that you're asking, that's what I'm asking. Yeah. This show is not about answers. Mm. This show is not about, you're not gonna end a season and be like, yes, thank you, Terrell, you explained it. I feel good and I
thought provoking.
It has to, because to me, that's how we're gonna get to these places, right? Only because I actually, you know, the TV is not there to heal you. It's there to provoke. It's there as Sterling said, the media is there to make you go, wow, I see myself. Let me have this conversation with somebody close to me. Let me find a way. Let me duplicate in my life this circle. The self-soothing that you're talking about in that moment is really important. That kid is trying to do his homework and trying to be on lookout. And at some point, his body and his brain go, I need to show you another way.
Right.
And his imagination goes, kum, kum, kum. And then you see the like what's really powerful about David. Right, like you see his Super Saiyan, you see his like his magic power,
that's
if
right,
you will.
Right.
I mean, and it's the same in all of us. All of us have that thing that then goes coo coo. Right. It flips out, it opens up, and you go, and then you start saying, "Well, God, I need to tap into that. I need to tap into this powerful thing, right, in order to survive." Then you keep doing it over and over again. You keep getting better at it. People keep telling you you're good at it.
That's right.
Right? And so good at it, I'm going to give you some money for it. Right. So I'm good at it, I'm going to give you a way out of this for you, your family, for two generations of your family, but just you, right? And so you start doing that thing you're talking about, which is like elbowing people out of the way, going, you messing with this thing that's really important to me. You start like making sure that only you can do it. You start snarling. You start doing what you were doing, this white, I call it white knuckling. Knuckles getting, you bearing your knuckles so tight to hold on to it that you can't see any, you can't see that, hey, you don't need to do this all the time.
That's right.
And that as a human being, as a person in a body, you're going to get tired. Things are going to wear out. So you need rest. You need sleep. You need care. You
I
need.
Wish Ocho was on this show, because Ocho, we got this thing called Ocho versus Science. But I'll wait. We'll wait to have that conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I'll come back.
Yeah. Please, 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 please.
But I wanted to say that because you're teeing up in a really good way what we're talking about in terms of season two, which is like that. Why is David waking up? David has a great job. He has gone to the good schools. He did the thing. Why is he still waking up in a sweat at night?
Yeah.
And I'm saying the same thing to myself, because I had to tell Barry Jenkins, also from Miami. I need to shout out Barry while we're here. When after we won Moonlight and we got these Academy Awards in our hotel rooms, I go lay down and I wake up in a pool of sweat.
Okay, let's go to that promo now. And then, because I feel like that's maybe the moment is why you created this.
Oh, yeah, no, it's
all right,
definitely
all right, cool, cool, let's go there, Because I'm like, all right, what does all this mean?
I'm selfish. Right. I'd definitely be like, this is my life, I'm going to make you watch it. This is what I'm going through, you going through it too.
You try to track it down. That moment. That moment that it all changed. That you forgot to wake up.
I wish this shit was done.
All right, so what's all of that?
One of the things that was really important to me, and they let me do it, they kind of fought me when we first started the process of editing. But I said, when he sits up, he's tired of this shit. And there's a reason for that, because I don't want you to come into the season being like, oh, this is a one-time thing. He had a weird nightmare that one time. No, no. Every day. Everybody has that moment where they're like, man, I let my guard down. I let it get to me. I mean, in school one time, this white girl spit on me, and I was like, and again, in my brain, I just was so stunned by it, I didn't even do anything. And when I got home, my mother was like, she looked at me like, are you my child?
Yeah, right, right.
And from that moment on, I was like, never again. Anybody want that smoke? Anybody wants that? I'm gonna give it to you. And so even in Moonlight, you see that, like, I just became this person who, like, just became much more. And you know, Sterling laughs at me because he's like, because he says I'll do this, like, effeminate way of, like, you know, brushing people off. I don't do it on purpose. I don't. It is a survival technique, though. It's a thing that goes, if I don't care for you, I think you're a danger to me. So I'm going to look down on you until I know that we're friends. Right. And that's I don't want to live my life like that. I don't want to walk through the world people thinking like I hate them. Right. But when that moment keeps playing in your head at night, when it keeps waking you up, when it keeps sitting you on the side of the bed. Right. Why don't we go, hey, I should probably get some help for this. Instead, David gets dressed and goes to work.
Right. Yeah.
And that was important. It was important for that kid is going through all that anxiety and feeling that underneath 15 years of adulthood.
Right. Achille, this is a big conversation. You're 18 years old, right? You grew up playing sports all your life, football. I mean, you embracing young David, what have you learned? Did you learn anything? Was there any powerful moments where you were able to, like, embrace, like, a scene and, you know, young David and say, wow, this is real for me over here?
Yes, of course. You know, I love David Makes Man, and I relate to it. And all the lessons throughout David Makes Man, I feel like I learned from, and really, you know what I'm saying, with me playing the character, playing the title character, I'm grateful for that chance as well, thank God, you know what I'm saying? I really get an insight in talking to Terrell and the rest of the writer's room, like Lucian, an insight to really break down the script and get a true understanding and learn from all the lessons that it provides, you know?
You did a phenomenal job, bro. Like, I've been down in South Florida for over 10 years now, and the people here are just different.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, T. Yeah. Oh, y'all are just different. Even in language. So
come on, Jit.
Jit, yeah, right? They said, y'all, I'm glad you captured it. It's real. It's raw. It's so South Florida. And when I run into people from Miami, not Fort Lauderdale, which I love, Broward County, but Miami, it's like, where are you from? Are you from New York? Like, I have the accent. So for you to, like, get the language down, the body language, you got it, bro. I played at UCF. And we had, half our team was dudes from Miami, you know, Jackson and Northwestern. And so for you to embrace that, phenomenal. You're from Houston.
Yes, sir.
How'd you get that down?
With me being a Houston native, you know what I'm saying? I just tried to relate to David as much as I can. You know what I'm saying? With me being raised by a single parent mother, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I know the struggles of being there for my mom whenever I can. You know what I'm saying? Having an older brother and a younger sister. I try to just do the best job I can with being there for my mom whenever I can. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Give me a little Miami real quick.
A little Miami. to help me with my Miami, to be honest, I shout out Terrell and really everybody on set. You know what I'm saying? They really cultured me and took me in. So, yeah.
Well, he's being modest. I mean, because really what would end up happening on set would be I would go, I mean, actually, forget set. I'm going to tell you about his audition. Mm. So we're in a screening room at Warner Brothers studio lot. And he comes in and he's like, yeah, I've done a few things, but, like, I've never, you know, I ain't never been in no studio lot doing. And I was like, cool, cool. It's all good. Just everybody relax. Just a camera right there. This nice lady, Dee Harris Lawrence, who's our showrunner. Beautiful black woman. We all here to this isn't about your talent. This is about figuring out if we can work together, but you talented, because you're here. Like, you wouldn't have gotten to this point if you weren't talented. And Keely said, okay, yes, sir. I said,
All right, cool.
Southern hospitality.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And I said, all right, so cool. So I say, hey, just go. Please. Like, just don't worry about it. Camera's off. Just go. And Akili starts railing at nobody. Nothing. He's shaking. He's cursing out Sky because Sky is dead, but also haunting him at night. And he's got tears coming down his face. And I say, hey, cool. That's cool. You good. Thank you. And he's still there. And I said, he has to be in our show. Two reasons. One, that's amazing. We're not going to get that nowhere else. But two, I know somebody else is going to exploit the shit out of that. I know somebody else is going to let him go there and not talk to him and say, hey, it's over. We are playing pretend. It's okay to stop.
What do you mean by that? Because I'm not in your world. I'm from sport. What do you mean by that?
Well, the same way you hype yourself up for a game,
right?
You hype yourself in the imagination, right? And he imagines, he gets there. He goes, he's in the drug game. He's fighting these people.
Whoa. So you mean that's, you have to be able to turn on and off?
Like, turn it on.
There's actors, entertainers that carry that.
That code switching that you see David do a lot throughout the season, you know what I'm saying? Season one and season two even, you know what I'm saying? Everybody does it throughout our real life, you know what I'm saying? So it's like getting a chance to see that on screen helps everybody.
You know, that's interesting because a lot of us athletes, we call it a switch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially football players, right? Mm-hmm. You got to be a little out there to run 21 miles per hour down a football field, 100 yards, and run smack into another grown man who's also running 15 to 20 miles per hour, right?
Not as fast as you.
Yeah, that's why I said 15.
I got it. I caught it. 15 to 20.
Right? But what you have to turn on that switch, what we talked about, what you asked me earlier, right? Yeah. Like, do you struggle?
Right.
And like, you have to go somewhere. And what happens is we struggle in our interpersonal relationships or off the field. Some of us, not everybody, because there's a lot of guys thriving. But there's some struggling to turn off that switch. I never thought that an actor or actress can go through the same thing.
Oh yeah, you can go home with people you weren't born with. Yeah, you go home with, because it's the same body. And if I sit here and recall those feelings, this is it's only going to show up on camera the more I feel it, the more I actually feel it. And if I don't say to myself, this is just pretend, I'm at work, I'm not actually in danger, right? And so that's why a lot of good actors, like I remember, I do this thing called Young Arts here in Miami, and I work with a lot of young people. And a lot of our kids from the projects, from, you know, lower income, they may not have the technique, but if you say to them, hey, your father was murdered and we think your uncle did it and the queen, your mother, is like hiding it, go. Mm. They know. They can go to the depth. They can. I know how that is. While other people can go, yeah, the technicality, I just described Hamlet to you, right? but if I describe it in the stakes of what the reality is, because our young people are in that reality so much, they can go there. And I said, D, I don't want this young man on nobody else's, you know, couch or in somebody's film doing that without having somebody say, hey, Akili, every time you walk off set, leave that here.
Wow.
Leave it here. Wow. It's not with you. It's not yours. It doesn't belong to you. Your family is great. Your mom is great. You're good. Breathe.
So OG, what advice would you give not only Akili, but any young actor, actress out there starting their career?
I mean, it's this process of betterment is unending. For anything that you're talking about, the evolution to becoming the best version of yourself. Like what T was saying, you don't want to ever come to the end of one of his things and be like, all right, get the chance to put that behind me, right? We are always in process. And I think that thing that you were talking about finding balance in the league is really important. Like I found there's so much self-obsession as an artist you know, as an actor, you're thinking about your body and your voice and all this other type of stuff, that it's nice to have something to put your focus on other than yourself. So for me, part of that evolution was fatherhood, was being married or whatnot, because I can't just think about myself all the time. Like, I have to think about these children, I have to think about family, etc.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you very much, I appreciate it. But also, there's no, I love going there. I love going there because I have no fear of releasing it. Now, sometimes my wife will tell me, you still carrying so-and-so. You still got a little Shango on you. My wife will tell me sometimes, you're not as successful as you think you are, right? But I do enjoy it. You prepare for work, right? You know, perfect practice makes perfect, so that when you get to the field, there's muscle memory. You don't have to think about it so much. You're sort of just reacting naturally. And then hopefully when you're done, you have the space to be available in a different way.
Because, it took me years to get there.
Yeah.
Took me years to get there. Like, I would carry the game. So Sunday we play 2 o'clock, 2:15 kickoff, whatever, 1:15 kickoff. And come 5 o'clock, I'm in my car going home. You know, I'm carrying it from that moment to it's like 24 hours. And when I got to Chicago, I got to a point where as soon as I walked out of the locker room, it was done. Right. But I would carry that home. Sometimes it, you know, back in the day, it would take a week. So I didn't even give you the proper introduction. We never do that on our show because people know who you guys are. And, you know, but you're the OG. Right. And you've been in the game for 20 plus years. Out of all the projects, Brown Sugar, Black Panther, which one are you most proud of?
Come on, man. That's the most proud of. I could tell you what was the most fun, which nobody would ever guess. Like when I did Supernatural, I had a lot of fun.
And when you're done, I'll tell you the one that I'm most proud of.
Okay. All right. Supernatural was a lot of fun. Proud. On camera?
Yes, on camera.
On camera.
Cause like when you look at it, a lot of people don't know. I'm like,
he done 7-Eleven plays, 50-11 plays. My
right,
man been on.
Right. It's
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. it is. No,
talk that talk.
No, it's a lot, and hopefully it there'll be more. I will say that OJ provided a very special moment and was a platform that changed life, right? And I remember the audition for it. Cause like as soon as they came, it was like Chris Darden. I was in college when the trial went on, and I was like, man, this dude is on the wrong side. I'm like, why are you trying to take the brother down? Like, this is one of the heroes. And so to immerse myself on the opposite side was a really interesting thing, because what a difficult position to have been placed in and sort of not really been given the agency to do anything at the same time. So it was amazing. I had a wonderful working experience. And a friend of mine, Kevin Carroll, who graduated from NYU, would tell me this thing anytime I work with somebody famous. He says, you can't be a fan and in the game at the same time. Because I would get to set and be like, oh, look at all these people that I like been watching my whole life. And I said, I would give myself a second to be a fan. Now we in the game, right? And there's a moment, and I'm sure you feel this at each point when you're in high school and you play against the other rival high school and you're like, yeah, I deserve to be here. You get to college, you play against I deserve to be here. You get to the league and you're like, maybe you have some considerations of like, how will I compare? And then you prove yourself and you're like, I deserve to be here.
I used to do that. I did that on broadcast.
Yeah. Totally. So like my first scene was with Courtney B. Vance, who I love. I just told you I want to play lineman. It's because of seeing him play lineman. Yeah. And we had this first scene, and it wasn't like he was so generous and so kind. And that's what acting at its best is, generous. There's selfish actors, there's generous actors. And I don't know how it works in the league, so you're gonna have to tell me. You want someone to push you, not as a means of trying to dominate you, but to bring out the best version of what you can bring to the table.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
This man pushed me in a way that was so loving And we both got a chance to like play like that. And I was like, I freaking deserve to be, like, excitement, not like I'm bad or I was like, oh my God.
Right.
I deserve to be here. And each time I would do scenes with Travolta and with Paulson and whatnot, I was like, this is so cool. Like people who were fans who I had up here are peers. And that was a wonderful feeling. And so like the cap on it was because I was fortunate enough to win the Emmy for that role. And being at the Emmys at that time, and I don't know what it was like for you, T, I would love to hear your experience of that other than the sweat that came later on that night.
Yeah.
But like people stood up, an auditorium of people who I've been watching my whole life to give kudos. And I was like, huh. Oh. That was a cool moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was powerful. I was watching that moment. I was tapped in. I would say the project that I'm most proud of for you is Frozen. In my household, my little girl.
That's a classic. That's always going to be a classic.
He made a food.
Oh,
out.
My God.
He got me.
No, I can't. The food's coming out, but just, you know, can you give us 3, 4, 5 movie shows that you've been a part of? Because sometimes we forget, man, like everything you've been a part of.
He doesn't let us forget.
What are you talking about? What do I talk about? We did.
He was like, yeah, when I was with Paulson that one time, and then I was with, you know.
Oh, Chef.
Chef, what we got here?
Shrimp and grits?
So we have blackened shrimp with 3 cheese grits and oven roasted salmon.
Chef, thank you so much. This looks amazing.
Thank you, Chef.
Presentation's awesome.
Appreciate it.
Got a question for you. You obviously been over there listening to the conversation. Mental health is something big and excited to watch. David Makes Man season 2, because they hit on the things that I'm passionate about. Growing up in Central Florida, how has mental health affected you or just been a part of your life?
To be really honest, the area that I grew up in, it wasn't something I was very focused on. I didn't really get up on mental health until I came to college down here. And that was kind of when it became known to me what it was, what it was about. Like I said, yeah, growing up back home, that's one of those things where it's like, you look at the man next to you and it's like, we all have problems, man up, you know. We don't tell each other, you know, you can have feelings. It's more so suck it up and get the job done. Just over time, dealing with mental health, I've grown to come will learn that being able to talk about your problems is very comforting. A lot of us, we don't feel like we can. And then even dealing with people who are like gay or bisexual, they have it worse, I feel like, especially from like places back home, because those are the people who they have to stay sheltered. You know, they have to stay in that closet, you know, because they can't talk to anybody. They're ashamed, they're put down, you know, and just it's tough, you know. I've tried to become a person to be very open-minded to everybody's problems, situations, because no one's perfect. No one's situation is better than the next. I try to become that person that people could talk to, because at one point in time, I felt like that. You know, I felt like I was that guy that had no one to talk to.
Why? Why? What was going on in your life where you felt isolated?
I dealt with a lot of deaths back to back. It was, I wouldn't say, a series of 4 deaths within 3 months. Close deaths, one including my mother's husband. So it took me in a place where it was like, not only did I know who to talk to, but it was like, what could you do for me? You couldn't do anything about it. I felt like I had been put in a place where no matter who I talked to, no one had an answer, you know? So it was like, I just felt that I needed to, the situation that I got myself in as far as being depressed, I needed to get myself out of it.
Let me ask you a question. Last question for me. I don't know if you guys want to jump in here after that. Your swagger is crazy. Straight up. I love it. Even like the little bread with the silverware inside of it, the chains, the hair, like
thank
the
you,
drip
thank
is,
you.
The glasses. You got to get the detail. Sick. It took me, when I got traded from the Chicago Bears to the New York Jets, I felt like that's when I stepped into my manhood. And that's like, I was 32, I believe. 31. And I feel like it takes time to find out who we are. And you got to be comfortable rocking certain stuff. You got to be comfortable the way you speak, the way, like, there's so much that goes into that. Do you feel like you're finally embracing, like, who you are, and, like, what was that process getting there?
I've always been one that just wanted to stand out.
And the reason why I say that is because, it, like, my expression came out through my style. You know, I was comfortable going and speaking in front of thousands of people and, like, no, this is how I dress.
Right.
And wearing shades and things like that. So that's why I go there, because I see your swag. I'm like, that's a lot of confidence.
I feel like I'm in the business where we're all starting to do this. Even my other chef friends that are out here, Chef Lowe, you know, that's one of my friends as well. But we're all kind of trying to take this whole idea of a chef and evolve it. You know, I have friends who still have the old school type of look where they wear the chef jackets and the tall hats. And then it's more so like us, we're moving into modern day culture and trying to take that idea of fashion and mix it in, you know, just to kind of make us feel comfortable as well while we're doing this.
Keep tapping into that, because, you know, what the Deion Sanders always saying, it's an old saying, it's like, you know, you look good, you feel good, you play good, you get paid good.
I know that.
For real. Seriously. Right? That's one of his sayings. But you got to be comfortable in who you are. Like, when you walk into a room, you got to own it.
Yes.
You know? And I start doing that when I'm like, man, speaking in front of, the Kennedy Forum, the Vatican with the Pope, and what else? Some amazing things. I testified in front of the Senate for mental health. Like, how do we reallocate $400 million to the mental health community? Like, I've been in some big settings. And what happened in New York for me is I went from, like, I got to wear a suit and tie. I was like, no, I wear black. I'm wearing my cap. I'm wearing this. And I just start owning the room. So I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for
this
having me.
This is tasty as ever. I mean, I don't want to go too crazy, but yeah, man, you did the damn thing right.
Thank
now.
You. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Oh, man. That's a great point that you just said, Brand. Like, there's so many, like, societal constraints on the way that you're supposed to be, the way you're supposed to, like, show up for things or whatnot. And I find that all the time, finding your way inside of that, where you don't feel constricted, but actually freed. By your dress, by the way you carry yourself. Sometimes when I give speeches or whatnot, because I know I'm given the benefit of the doubt of intelligence by virtue of going to Stanford or NYU, that if I throw something in the speech that is more colloquial, Ebonics or what have you, like, I love the idea of being able to show that intelligence doesn't have to manifest in one particular way, right? And I think so much has happened within hip hop too, that sort of pushed the envelope of folks being able to recognize it, like, no, these guys are brilliant. You know what I'm saying? Kendrick Lamar is brilliant. You know what I'm saying? And the need not to code switch as much. Ryan Coogler does not know how, I don't think, knows how to code switch. Like, you hear that every interview, he will be talking to Kevin Feige the same way he's talking to Michael B. And it's like, oh, can we do that now?
Yeah, is that possible?
I love that.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
But the other thing that I did want to bring up that first of all, thank you for reaching out for this in general, but reaching out and to the House committee about the reallocation of those funds. Because there are communities that desperately need that mental health access and they just don't have it. But particularly, I'm just going to speak from a place of being a Miami City boy. We've had so much violence in our city in the past 10 days, right? And I think it's some of it's touching on what Chef is talking about. There are so many families, mine included, I know around this forum, the same, that we had, like, back-to-back deaths over the last year. And we don't have, like, where is the grief counseling?
Wow.
Like, where is the national mourning that is supposed to, like, how, who are we supposed to talk to when some, like, when there is no answer for this thing? Yeah. And I think grief is so tricky, because people are like, well, death's a part of life. You move on. And it's like, does it? Because when my mother died, I will tell you, like, every time someone else loses a parent, when someone, a friend of ours, very close friend of ours, lost their mom during COVID. And I said, listen, you're a part of this weird club now. It's a very strange club, but you're a part of it. It's the worst club to be a part of. But I'm going to tell you, the grief never goes away. It only grows. and it grows with you. And so where you grow and how you grow, that's how the grief will grow. So don't stop. Don't try to not pay attention to it. Don't try to stuff it in the corner because it's going to be there. Like, don't, somebody's going to tell you that it goes away. It never goes away. Wow. Not that kind of grief. Right. It's with you. Right. But it can grow with you in a specific way. And the way it grows with you, you can be in charge of that. Right. I told these fellas when we were on Zoom the other day, you know, I just recently started listening to this young lady talking about the way the ancestors used to grieve. And some of it was about telling stories, right? Talking about the person. Again, not keeping it in the corner. And
because a lot of times someone passed or friends is dealing with grief. You know, it's like, what to say? What, exactly. You know, yeah. Let's not bring it up because it's going to put it on their mind. We don't know how to talk about it.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the things that's helped me, and it sounds, it's the weirdest thing, and it actually happens in David Makes Man, but it's like I will remember, I'll just allow myself to remember a thing, even if it's painful, but also like couple it with like something, like my mom was really funny. She was mean, but she was also really funny, right?
Right,
she,
right.
She was a Scorpio, so she was like, you know, this is a Scorpio. So, like, she would say, and she would just say weird stuff. And so sometimes she would say, like my brothers and sister and I would get in a fight. And, you know, we from Miami, so we hood as hell. And we'd be like, your mammy. Like, yo, mammy. And I would hear my mom in the other room be like, bitch, yo, mammy. And we would all stop and be like, is she talking about herself? Who is she talking about? And I swear to God, like, there are just moments where I'll hear her say that in my head, and I would just start cracking up laughing. And I'll just tell, like, whoever's around me, like, my mom used to say this thing, and it was really funny. And I'm just laughing about it right now. But it keeps her, again, it's not, she's not gone. Right? It doesn't go away. But it's growing with me. You know what I mean? I allow it to be there. And that, I think that's so, when he said that, I was like, that's right. Because especially in our community, so many people were affected by COVID. Right? Disproportionate in numbers. And I think we need counseling. We need some access to help us get to that next point, right? How is it showing up? I think it's showing up in not so great ways right now.
Yeah,
right?
We touched on mental health in so many different ways today. It presents itself in so many different ways. In the second season, there's a moment in the hospital. I don't even, this is my first time sitting down with actors and entertainers, so I don't know what to reveal, what not to reveal, right?
Oh, yeah, you can tell it.
No, I don't want to tell it. But there's this moment where you had this moment, you know, the Big David.
Older David, yes, sir.
Right, not you. Big David had this moment with his mom, and I want to show that moment that he had in the hospital with his mom and get your thoughts on that, because we're talking about this, and this is another way it presents itself, right? Substance abuse and, you know, addiction in our communities. It's prevalent.
She's just worried about you. I mean, she's right to be.
I'm okay. I am. I'm okay. I would love for them to turn that AC up in here. I thought hospital's supposed to be cold.
This kind of stress, Ma, might not be good for you. I mean, chaos and boredom.
What?
I'm just saying, I just want to make sure you're good. I mean, this whole thing could be really triggering.
Go home, David.
Ma, wait.
Go home. You really bringing up me being an addict now? Right now? In case I what, forgot? I remember every day that I wasn't there for y'all. It's on my heart. It's on my hands, David. I am sorry for those times, but for the record, I have been clean 15 years. 1-5. But you wouldn't remember that because every time we celebrate something, you got work. Just go home. David, we have all changed, baby. We have. Me, your brother. It's you that's the same. And I know that's scary. You had to do a lot of growing up quick. But you got a chance here to see that the world has changed before it's too... Go on home. Go on home, David. Go find you some calm.
So earlier in the show, I talked to you, like, you know, about, you know, I saw myself in this, in the season so many times, and other people that I do life with. And there's a moment, and you go back to season one, you know, Saren being abused by his stepdad. And that was mom. A season. I was like, wow, that's.
Yeah.
I grew up with someone and just super close. A couple years ago, we took a trip, just he and I, and just a big event. And walking down the street, he just stopped me and said, I never told anybody this. And he told me that his stepdad was sexually abusing him as a kid. Because we were talking about parenting and why he parents his kid the way he is and so protective. You know, so that was a moment. This moment here, my mom gave me permission years ago to always tell her story because it's a powerful one. But my mother, you know, she's been clean for 10 years.
Mm. Congratulations.
Alcoholic, right? And she went to Betty Ford years ago, 2014 maybe. No, before that, getting my numbers mixed up a little bit. So that was powerful. You know, there's so many different moments where I'm like, man, that's me, or, you know, I can relate to that. So that moment, why was that so important for you to tell that story?
Again, you know, I love that. I love when people, I'm gonna be honest with you, people always are like, you're so smart. You put these moments that you know will grab people. And I'm usually like, that's just cause that's my life.
That's real. right.
I mean, one time Barry said to me, hey, Barry actually, yeah, my truth.
It's your truth.
And Barry wrote to me one time in the middle of editing Moonlight, and he said, T, do you remember writing this scene where, there's a scene in Moonlight where Paula basically talks Sharon out of some money. She pretends like there's somebody in the house so that she can get money out of him before she sends him to school. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you remember writing this scene? This scene is killing me, man. And I said, nah, but I remember when it happened.
Nah, for real, though. For real, though. That's real.
And so there have been times that I brought up to my mom, like, yo, you sure you need to be stressing like this? Because, you know, you're vulnerable. And she was like, yeah, I know I'm vulnerable. We're all vulnerable. You're vulnerable. What you doing about you? Right? Are you in a place where you're making sure that you're okay? And for me, it's those moments then, and Alana is a dear friend of ours. Alana's from here, the woman who plays Gloria. She's from Miami as well. She went to Carroll City. She grew up in Carroll City. And I've known her since I was 13 years old. And one of the things that she got about that moment is that she still cares. Like, even though she's hurt that he brought it up, she still cares enough to go, yo, why you hurting me? Why you digging at what's my struggle? And she does it enough to know, like, yo, it's because you ain't getting sleep. It's because you're not dealing with your own demon. You know what I mean? You're not dealing with what's happening inside. So for me, it's like those wake-up calls happen for David throughout season one, especially in the first episode. And we see him ignoring the out of him, right? As we all do, to get to the next thing. So that's why it was really important to me, because I just think, you know, we muscle through life. Similarly, what we were talking about, the grief, we just sort of muscle through it,
yeah.
Right? Just kind of pretend. Sorry, you were about to say something, sir?
No, I mean, yes, but no, I was listening. I was just thinking about agency, having some sort of control over how something comes out. And the sort of instinct that most human beings have to resist, to suppress, what have you, and then it comes out in ways that are unhealthy, right? Yes. But if you sort of acknowledge and are aware, right, it's not that the grief doesn't go away, the struggle doesn't go away, it's present, you know, but you acknowledging it gives you some level of agency on how it manifests in the world. Rather than being sort of reactive, you get to be proactive with, like, how that happens. And I think that's something for a lot of people, it's a foreign concept. Like, it's like, well, sometimes I just do this shit.
Right.
You know? You know what I mean? Like, that is something that is familiar, but the idea of being like, oh, I'm having an uncomfortable feeling mm-hmm. right now.
I'm vulnerable.
And sitting with that, like sitting like, oh, this is what it feels like to be sad. This is what it feels like to be angry. And recognizing that the feeling and taking action upon it are two separate things, right? You can have the feeling going on inside of you and how you choose to respond is up to you. It doesn't have to be automatic. It doesn't have to be like that. Like, you get to have some sort of agency in that. But the idea of that for a lot of people is foreign because, number one, we spend so much of our life on autopilot that we're not even aware of what we're aware of. And then number two, like you were saying, T, just now, it is somewhat painful. Right. It is somewhat uncomfortable. And the instinct, usually, the impulse is like, why do I got to dig up that old shit? Why do I need to, like, that's in the past.
But you also have to remember, Sterling, that, well, not, you don't have to remember, but I also, to that point, because I say the same thing. Why is it so hard to just be present and deal with it in the present? Yep. And I realized the two things, both options are painful. Yep. The reacting to it right off the bat and the, like, sitting with it are both are painful. But you get that adrenaline in one of them. Right? It's one of the reasons why people are rageaholics. Because if I can anger myself up to being angry, that little snake brain in the back of your head, that a little medulla oblongata kicks in, all that good energy, and now I got energy at least. Yeah, I get a kick. Yeah. Something kicks in. And we come from chaos. Some of us.
Sure.
We come from facing bears and facing tigers and lions every day. So we're used to going, oh, I got to face this bear again. Need that adrenaline. I got to get.
Whether it's a perceived or real threat, the exactly. response is the
response
same.
Back here is that. And that keeps us superhuman past it. Right.
Yeah.
And to be able to go, nah, I'm going to sit in this actually takes a kinds of patience and saying, I'm actually not going to turn that part of my brain on. Right. I'm actually going to let that rest.
Takes work. And that's why I'm so thankful for what you guys have created. Michael B. Jordan, executive producer, Oprah Winfrey, executive producer. Did they get it right away? They understood it. And I know Michael B. Jordan's in his phase now where he's really, you know, positioned himself as a creator and a director and, you know, like, yeah. So did they get it right away?
Yes. So I tell stories, so that's what I do. When I first told it, when I first met MBJ to talk to him about this, one of the things I said was, I'm gonna cry. Mm. And he was like, what? I was like, when Wallace died. Then I'm like, bro.
Not Wallace.
Fam, Wallace on the wire hurt my heart.
Hurt us all.
Hurt me. And I like, and he was like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I was like, and you know, MBJ is the nicest person in the world. And so he's sitting there trying to hug me, and I'm like bawling and crying. I'm like, why was that bad? He's like, it's like, Terrell, it was 10 years ago. Like, we're okay. And so then I sat down, and he had read the draft before he even signed on. And so I'm sitting down about to pitch him. I'm about to say, hey, you know, here's the story, here's these people. And he's like, hey, so I really enjoyed this. And he pulls out a notebook, flips it open. He's like, this character, I love this character. I love that they are Black and Afro, and they're Afro-Latinx, and that this and this. I love that we have a non-binary character. That's amazing in the story. Can we have more of that pulls through this way? David, we need to make sure that the heightened imagination in this is all throughout. Wow. I'm really excited about, I mean, he is, now, that may sound like a good, smart meeting with a producer. That is never how meetings with producers go. Never. They never are like, I read your script and from top to bottom, I know everything about it. I love it. Here are the characters I want to see more of. Here's where I think I can explore. Here's where I can help you out with, you know, some thoughts and ideas. He was just ready.
He's brilliant.
He's brilliant at getting in stories and making them like making the epic intimate. Mm. Like, he's really good at going, all of this is happening, but what it really is about is this. And then you get him in a room and you go, and so then he dragged me around Hollywood pitching this thing. And so he's like, Terrell's gonna do something amazing. Yeah. He would be like, go T. And I would be like, I've got my notes. You know what I mean? And I would like pull out these pages. And when we got to OWN, to pitch to the OWN network, Miss Winfrey was actually in another meeting. She was in a big meeting down the hall, and she saw us pass by. So she, like, said, you know, stop to the meeting, like, hold on 1 second. And she comes down to the conference room because, you know, her execs are going to handle that meeting while she goes back to this larger network meeting. She's like, good to see you. I'm about to go. And she's about to leave, and I'm like, cool. Oprah's not going to sit in front of me while I try to do this pitch. Like, that's crazy. And then I believe it was Mike Kelly who said, Miss Winfrey, I think you actually might want to stay for this. And MBJ said, yeah, I think so. So then I'm like, in words. Like, yeah, you know, like, damn. Yeah. I'm already sweating. Like,
I was about to say,
you know me.
You can't put Oprah and the N-word in the same sentence. I was like,
fam, I was like, damn. So then she sat right in front of me, right? And she sort of, oh, fam, I was like all over the place. And then.
Sweating like David.
Just get it. And I said, I started talking. At some point, I veered off course and I started talking about Double Dutch. Because this is what David does. There's the one rope of him at the Ville, trying to navigate these corner boys, keeping his brother safe, keeping his mom clean, keeping the world that is the Ville stable, right? And then there's him at school, trying to keep up with these white students who have had an ability, had this training before him, that are being geared towards this program in a pedigree kind of way, and trying to keep that balance. And so that's what he's doing, keeping the rhythm. And if he gets out of that rhythm for 1 second, he gonna get towed up by that rope. And that's when she said, stop. When does this take place? I said, now. She's like, all right. And after that, she was in. She was locked in, and she just was, and by the end of it, all of us were, you know, tissuing up, and she was like, this is poetry on TV.
It's poetry, and it's therapeutic. And thank you for season 2.
We had to fight to get a meal. Yeah, wrongfully accused. We had to fight to get the pills. That's why we right to get a deal. He on the team, he gotta eat, you know. Despite your skills, facts. Keep it riding for the fam. You gotta light the wooden wheel straight up. But in the past bag, work up in the trash bag. I'll pass a lie to take the test before I pass class. Yeah, and my family needed bread. I had to come correct. That's why I keep airing.